Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hi, everyone. If you go to the episode description, you can check out our sponsor deals. Our sponsors make it possible for you to download Cold Case Files each week for free. So check out the promo code DEALS. You might just find something you like, something you need, or a great gift for your friends and family. On to the show. On June 2nd, 1991, Denise Huber went to a Morrissey concert with her friend Tammy. Denise was 23 and had just finished college the year before. Denise got into her car, waved goodbye, and headed for the beach house that she shared with her parents. She was almost home when she had to pull over. Her car had a flat tire. I would have gotten out of the car to look at the tire and then have done my best to change it. I would have acted brave, though I would secretly be hoping a good citizen would pull over and help me. I don't know what Denise did after she pulled over that night. No one does. Because her friends and family never heard from her again. From A&E, this is Cold Case Files. Denise's friend Tammy Shriven felt concerned when Denise didn't come home or even call. This is Tammy.
Every time I would pass by a car, a blue-colored car or a Honda, I always looked to see if it was her car. And so I was looking at everything on my way home that evening. And then all of a sudden, I looked to the side of the road, and her car was right there. And I couldn't believe it.
Tammy found Denise's car and noticed a flat tire. She ran to look inside, hoping for some clue as to where her friend had gone. The car was empty, though, and her temporary relief turned to frustration. Here's Tammy again.
I think I even screamed, "Oh my God, Denise, where are you? Come home to me."
Tammy called the police, and Lieutenant Ron Smith was the one to respond. This is Lieutenant Smith.
At that point, we had absolutely no clues. She wasn't involved with high-risk activities like gangs or drugs or gambling or anything like that, but she just disappeared without a trace. All we had was an empty car. So we believed we had a crime, but not really a crime scene.
Search crews combed the area and helicopters surveyed the area, but they weren't having any luck locating Denise. Her parents stayed at home near the phone in case anyone called.
Her car was that close to the house, so we could hear the helicopter searching, and you know what they're searching for, and you just, I mean, it's just an impossible to even describe that night, that sinking feeling. It was totally the worst night of my life, I know.
The search went on for days, but there weren't any leads on where Denise had gone. It was like she just disappeared. Here's Lieutenant Smith again.
We never got a lead that we considered hot. And so eventually the case went cold. Even though we continued to work it and it was our top priority case, we got to the point where we had no clues that were leading us anywhere productively.
Tammy never stopped looking for her friend Denise, and she never gave up hope that she would be found.
I still had dreams about her. I had dreams that she came back, or I had dreams that it never happened. And I found her, and we were gonna come back on this big ship and show everybody that Denise is okay.
Getting birth control can be a hassle. You should be able to get it when and where you need it without judgment. 10 million women in the United States know the struggle is real. That's why HERS is here to level the playing field. Go to forhers.com/coldcase to get your first month of birth control for just $5. HERS is helping women across the country get convenient and affordable access to birth control. They provide access to licensed doctors online who can evaluate you, and if appropriate, prescribe you birth control that can be delivered directly to your door. HERS offers 10 well-known birth control options and bundles the cost of receiving your birth control into one low price without the need for insurance. Get your first month of birth control from forhers.com/coldcase for just $5 right now while supplies last and subject to doctor approval. Restrictions apply. See website for full details. That's forhers.com/coldcase. forhers.com/coldcase.
The Hit Reels Channel podcast, Murder Made Me Famous, is back with all new episodes on Podcast One.
Ridgway did not seem to have the kind of family that would produce a man with so much anger. It just didn't seem to fit.
Join crime reporter Steve Helling as he investigates the most infamous crimes imaginable.
This murder illustrates just how brazen Jack the Ripper was.
Download new episodes of Murder Made Me Famous every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
In 1994, 3 years after Denise went missing, a lead came from an unexpected location, 300 miles away from where her car had been found. Jack and Elaine Court lived in Arizona, and on July 9th, they met a man named John Femolaro. They wanted to buy some painting supplies from him. This is Jack Court.
John is a little bit off-center. I mean, he's a little bit different. When you talk to him, he's not straightforward and very evasive when you ask the questions.
John Femolaro tells the couple that he's an experienced paint supplier and just moved from California. He gestured to a large Ryder truck parked in his driveway. This is a Lane Court.
It had accumulated quite a bit of dust. There was grass growing around the wheels, so it's pretty obvious it had been sitting there for some time.
Feeling somewhat suspicious, the couple decided to look into John Femolaro and the truck a little more.
So as we pulled away, he said, you know, just write down the numbers, and we have a friend that's out of Phoenix, a policeman who's in charge of stolen vehicles, and so we said, we'll give him the number.
When the truck, numbered 488708, was run through the missing vehicle search, there was a hit. The truck had been stolen. On July 13th, Deputy DiGiacomo headed to John Femolaro's house. No one answered. So the deputy focused on the stolen truck. Here's Deputy DiGiacomo.
I looked at the truck, and I noticed from the back of the truck, which was locked, it's a batten lock. It's very small, but it's real secure. Running out from under this door where the lock is a red extension cord.
Deputy DiGiacomo, a veteran of the narcotics squad, believed the signs indicated that the truck could be a meth lab.
I think because of the cord running, something's plugged in, and I think it's floating lab. And they're used all the time.
He notifies the narcotics task force, and less than an hour later, they pull into the drive, led by Detective Mark Garcia. The detective pulled open the back door of the truck, but he didn't find drugs. Instead, there was a single freezer powered by the red cord. Inside the freezer was a large black plastic garbage bag. This is Detective Garcia.
There was obviously something frozen inside. I began to run my hand down from the top to the bottom and felt what I believed was the arm of a human being.
The truck that went from a simple stolen vehicle to a possible meth lab now needed to be investigated for evidence of a homicide.
We have a Ryder truck which is found to be stolen. And inside of this vehicle, I'm told there's a freezer with some body parts. So we will be handling this as a homicide.
Responding to the homicide call was Detective Lonnie Brown and Lieutenant Scott Masher. They turn a video camera on as they enter the truck. Here's Detective Brown.
The only thing in the freezer is kind of a lump of black plastic in one corner of the freezer. That's the only thing in there.
There is quite a stench coming from this bag.
After using his pocket knife to cut through three layers of large black plastic bags, Detective Brown revealed what was inside the bag. This is Lieutenant Masher.
As Detective Brown cut through three bags and pulled them back, it was quite apparent, it was obvious, it was a human body, frozen solid.
The very first thing I can remember seeing is the right arm up behind the back and the steel handcuffs. And that's like, my God, we've got a frozen body here that's handcuffed.
That was Detective Brown, who after discovering the handcuffed body, had no doubt that he was dealing with a homicide. Here's Detective Brown again.
To me, it's very obvious. You know, people don't just jump in the freezer and get handcuffed.
At this time, we don't have an identity. I'm going to go ahead and seal this freezer back up and shut off the video.
The detectives closed up the truck and sent it to be processed for evidence at the crime lab. Before the truck was removed, though, John Famularo, now a homicide suspect, pulled in the driveway. He's arrested and brought in for questioning.
My name's Scott. I'm a lieutenant here with the Sheriff's Department, and it's real important that you be truthful with me, that you be honest with me. That's all I want. Famularo?
Yes, sir.
Is that Italian, or?
Yes, sir.
The reason I want to talk to you is it's a pretty serious problem now. We have a stolen truck there at your house, okay? That Ryder truck. And, John, there's a body in the truck.
John Famularo had been cooperative up until Lieutenant Masher asked him questions about the truck. This is Lieutenant Masher again.
I began to ask him about the truck, the freezer, and the body, which he had absolutely nothing to say. He just requested a lawyer.
With their suspect refusing to speak, the investigators reviewed the evidence, hoping to find the identity of the victim found in the freezer. Lieutenant Masher and Detective Brown returned to his home to see if they had missed any clues.
The garage, the living room, the bedrooms are full of boxes, cardboard boxes. They're full of stuff.
They took video of that search as well.
This is the living area, stacked with boxes and VCR.
It turned out that John Famularo wasn't only a murder suspect, but he also appeared to be a hoarder. Here's Detective Brown again.
It was just incredible to walk in there and think, my God, we've got to search this house. We're looking for evidence of a homicide, and this is what we have to search.
When they were able to negotiate through the maze of boxes, they found some items in the bedroom that could help their case.
Several weapons, what appears to be a Colt revolver. There's a sledgehammer on the floor, and a shotgun. Under the bed, a pair of handcuffs. And two knives.
As they continued their search into the garage, they found more boxes. One labeled Christmas. It had a hammer and a nail puller inside. Those tools could be used for Christmas decorations, but that wouldn't have explained why they appeared to be speckled with blood. All the potential evidence was packed up and sent in to be processed. After returning to the station with the evidence, the investigators prioritized the boxes and started with five that seemed particularly likely to be related to their investigation. Four of the five boxes appeared to have belonged to a woman. They recorded as they went through the boxes.
Detective, would you please start?
Appears to be a pair of black female underwear. Right now, taken out of a small black woman's bag. A pair of black high heel shoes with at least pumps should be noted also. In the bottom, there are some kind of fibers and stains. Materials which may appear to be blood.
Citibank card for Denise Huber.
Bloodstained clothes, scuffed shoes, and a woman's purse with her ID still inside. They all seem like probable evidence of an abduction and murder.
Okay, I need you to go upstairs and start booking him for homicide.
Getting in shape isn't just about losing weight. It's about learning healthier habits and feeling better about yourself. That's why you need to know about Noom. Noom is a habit-changing solution based on a cognitive behavioral approach that helps users learn to develop a new relationship with food through personalized courses. I love Noom because it holds me accountable, gives me a community, and helps me set goals. Small steps make big progress. Sign up for your trial today at Noom, noom.com/coldcase. That's noom.com/coldcase. Noom has one of the biggest and most accurate food databases available. It lets you track meal habits, visualize portion sizes, and see calorie density at a glance. And it only takes 10 minutes a day. And you have access to a goal specialist and the entire Noom community for support. Sign up for your trial today at Noom, noom.com/coldcase. What do you have to lose? Visit noom.com/coldcase to start your trial today. Noom.com/coldcase, the last weight loss program you'll ever need. The investigators' first priority became to determine if the victim was the same woman whose identification was found in the boxes. Dr. Amber Schultz was responsible for processing the body along with the crime scene investigator, Detective Mike Winey. This is Dr. Schultz.
Well, as you can imagine, in Phoenix, Arizona, we don't deal with frozen bodies very often. It's very hot here. We deal with decomposition due to heat, not due to cold. So this was something new for us to deal with.
As the body thawed, it had literally started falling apart. Here's Detective Winey.
Oftentimes, you'll find that the skin, the outer skin, will tend to separate from the inner tissues. It's what we call sloughing, and the skin was in that state.
Using a hairdryer, Detective Winey attempted to thaw one of the hands with the hope of being able to lift a fingerprint. Here's Detective Winey again.
What I did in this case was to grasp the fingers and pull the skin tightly behind the finger so as to flatten or tighten the skin on the underlying surface where the pattern area is.
After the hand was thawed, he pressed it to an ink pad and then made prints to compare it to the ones on Denise's driver's license. This is Detective Winey again.
Well, after comparing the two prints, I told the investigators that this was in fact a positive identification and that the deceased was indeed Denise Huber.
The investigators called the police in Newport Beach and shared what they had uncovered about Denise Huber. This is Lieutenant Ron Smith. Remember, he's the investigator from Newport Beach that was on Denise's case 4 years prior.
I had never heard of Yavapai County up to that point. Didn't even know where it was. But they said, we think we have Denise Huber. Do you know who she is? And the hair on my back of my neck just stood up.
The detectives from California and Arizona started to work together to build a case for murder. They had a suspect and they had a victim, but they didn't know how exactly the murder had happened. Lieutenant Masher had a theory.
The skull of the victim was completely crushed in, and it was pretty apparent that from blunt force trauma caused the death of Denise.
None of the weapons found in John Fumalaro's bedroom matched the injuries on Denise. But there was another object that could have caused her head injury. This is the tape made while in the suspect's garage.
In it is a wood handle claw hammer, and on the claw hammer section and the blunt side hammer section appears to be dry blood.
What I think at that time is this is probably going to be related to the female in the freezer. As an investigator, you want to know those things.
That was Lieutenant Masher, and he believed that the hammer helped support his theory of blunt force trauma causing Denise's death. So they turned to Dr. Laura Fulginetti, a forensic anthropologist.
This was probably the most difficult blunt force trauma case I've ever done. And the reason for that is that her head literally was in hundreds of pieces. He either became enraged or he just needed to kill her. I mean, I don't know. This is an overkill situation where he's hitting her with more than one weapon and he's pounding on her. It's not, I just need you dead. It's like, I hate you almost.
Dr. Fulginetti reconstructed the skull fragments, putting them together like a mosaic. Denise had been beaten 37 times, and each fracture was consistent with the hammer and nail puller found in the garage. Having identified the weapon and victim, there was one more thing that needed to be settled. Which state had jurisdiction? The exact location where Denise Huber was killed had to be discovered so that the suspect could be tried in the right state. Investigators re-examined the evidence, and they found a receipt for a freezer that had been purchased just a few days after Denise had disappeared. Here's Lieutenant Masher again.
We were even able to determine that it was delivered to a location, and that freezer was delivered to a storage shed facility in Laguna Hills.
Crime scene investigator Lori Crutchfield is sent to the storage shed to look for evidence. She decided to use luminol.
It's a chemical reaction, and it reacts with a component in the blood. And in doing so, it glows, it luminesces, and it's a blue-green color. To get that color, you have to be in the dark.
She concentrated in the southwest corner of the building. She noticed the paint on the concrete was chipping away. The luminol had a reaction. Here's CSI Crutchfield again.
The positive reaction was on the edges of where the paint was chipping away and the concrete. And it was just two semicircular areas within a few inches of the wall.
Behind the boards, the investigators found traces of blood, confirmed by a DNA test. It appeared that they had found the scene of Denise's murder. John Famularo would be charged in California.
Find the defendant, John Joseph Famularo, guilty of the crime of felony, to wit, violation of Section 187 of the Penal Code of the State of California.
After a six-week trial, John Famularo was convicted of kidnapping and killing Denise Huber. He was sentenced to death. Denise's father was comforted by the fact that the mystery had been solved.
I always tried to hold out hope, and as bizarre as it was in the way that it happened, we were glad because it was solved, and we do have a man in prison right now.
The cold case detectives didn't feel the same closure as Denise's family, because when they went over the boxes of evidence, other personal effects were revealed, and women's clothing that didn't belong to Denise.
This is still an open book. You know, where it all goes, I don't know. I would love to talk to Mr. Famularo and find out.
John Famularo hasn't, at this point, been charged with any additional murders. He was 37 when the truck was discovered in 1994. He's now 62 and still currently incarcerated on death row in St. Quentin. Cold Case Files, the podcast, is hosted by Brooke Giddings, produced by McKamey Lynn and Steve Delamater. Our executive producer is Ted Butler. Our music was created by Blake Maples. This podcast is distributed by Podcast One. The Cold Case Files TV series was produced by Curtis Productions and is hosted by Bill Curtis. Check out more Cold Case Files at aetv.com or learn more about cases like this one by visiting the A&E Real Crime blog at aetv.com/realcrime.